turn in rage against the holy covenant and do damage. So he shall return and show regard for those who forsake the holy covenant. So the following year, Antiochus again tries to attack Egypt and plunder it, but is thwarted by the Romans, who are now allied with Egypt. This is the beginning of Roman power and Roman involvement, which culminated 150 years later with Cleopatra's death and Rome taking control of the country of Egypt. So here he's trying to attack Egypt and plunder it, but is thwarted by the Romans, losing Cyprus to Egypt, which was its former owner. So Cyprus had belonged to Egypt originally, and then was taken by the king of the north, and then goes back to Egypt now. He is forced to leave Egypt and return home. So angry following his defeat, he vents his anger on the Jews in Jerusalem, extending special favors to those Jews who will turn away from their religion. That's the meaning of that last sentence. So he shall return and show regard for those who forsake the holy covenant. Those Jews, in other words, who betray their religion, are going to receive favor from Antiochus Epiphanes. And forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress. Then they shall take away the daily sacrifices and place there the abomination of desolation. So this is a more detailed prophecy about what we saw in Daniel chapter 8. 168 BC saw the climax of these events. Antiochus sent troops to the Holy Land. They desecrated the temple and abolished the daily sacrifices. Look back at chapter 8 for a moment to verse 11. Remember these prophecies here. He even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host. And by him the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. And he said to me, for 2,300 days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed. 2,300 days, 1,150 days, literal days, because it was 2,300 sacrifices, and there were two sacrifices a day. In fact, if you look in your margin, it says evening and morning. So 2,300 evenings and mornings comes to 1,150 days. So that's what took place. The sacrifices were ended for that period of time. And the abomination of desolation, which is mentioned here, was fulfilled. A statue of Jupiter Olympus, a pagan god, was placed in the Holy of Holies. Remember, the Holy of Holies symbolically is where God's throne is, and the high priest could only go in there once a year on the Day of Atonement. But here was this pagan who went in there and placed a statue of Jupiter Olympus, a pagan god, right there. Now, some people claim that this is a reference to the Dome of the Rock, but that is not correct, because the Dome of the Rock was not built until the 7th century AD. This incident follows on from all the other prophecies about the kings of Egypt and Syria, the king of the north and the king of the south. So, you know, it's not talking about an event as late as the 7th century AD. And also he smeared sow's blood, pig's blood, on the altar. Again, a double offense to the Jews. So, you know, the abomination of desolation is what it's referred to, and it's one of the major anti-Jewish acts that has been conducted in history. Those who do wickedly against the covenant he shall corrupt with flattery, but the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. So those who do wickedly against the covenant between Israel and God, those Jews, in other words, who turn against their God, he shall corrupt with flattery. But the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. So, you know, he divided the Jewish people. Some would naturally turn their backs on their religion, but others stayed faithful. Now, take note here, the specific events of the 2nd century BC end in the beginning, in the middle of verse 32. So the specific events of the 2nd century BC end here, in the middle of verse 32. In verse 40, we see the expression used, at the time of the end. And then we can look at the end time events. But meanwhile, there are these other verses in the middle, which different people interpret in different ways. In verse 32, at the end of the verse, it says, the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. Nothing like this is recorded until the time of Christ and the New Testament church, the great exploits of God's people. So here, you know, we're switching to a later period, not that much later. The Abomination of Desolation was in the middle of the 2nd century BC. So it's less than 200 years later that the New Testament church is in existence, and the people of God are carrying out great exploits. But notice the transition from physical Israel to spiritual Israel. And those of the people who understand shall instruct many. And yet for many days they shall fall by sword and flame, by captivity and plundering. And this has been the story of God's church. Preaching and persecution. That's really what it comes down to. Preaching and persecution. Which has gone on and off, for the last 2,000 years. Now when they fall, they shall be aided with a little help. But many shall join with them by intrigue, and some of those of understanding shall fall, to refine them, purge them, and make them white until the time of the end, because it is still for the appointed time. These two verses are the story of God's church. People are called, some fall away, all are tested, some are proved. Look at Revelation chapter 12 in this context, chapter 12 of Revelation, and verse 6. Then the woman, the true church, fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. A period of 1,260 years. We'll come to this in more detail next week when we go through Revelation. Verse 11, they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. You know, many people have died for their faith. For their commitment to God. Verse 13, now when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. So here's Satan persecuting the church. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she's nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. We will go through that next week. But the point to realize here is that this has been the history of God's church. Preaching and persecution. We preach the gospel as we're able to, but persecution tends to follow that preaching. And then even martyrdom follows it when people are killed for believing God's truth. So verse 35, it says that some of those of understanding shall fall, to refine them, purge them, and make them white until the time of the end. This vision, like the ones in Daniel 2 and 7, continues on down to the end time. Until the appointed time, because it is still for the appointed time, it says. Now we come to verses 36 through 39. These seem to be a passage about the temporal and spiritual forces that govern the world from the time of Christ right down until modern times, as in chapters 2 and 7, which deal with the Gentile empires, the Roman Empire and the Roman Church in particular. Church and state work together, committed fornication, as we saw in Revelation 17, to control the people. And an easy relationship, to be sure, but that's the way it was done. But let's read through it, and then I want to read you something from Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, which I think is an interesting comment on this. Then the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished. For what has been determined shall be done. He shall regard neither the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, but he shall magnify himself above them all. But in their place he shall honor a God of fortresses, and a God which his fathers did not know, he shall honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and pleasant things. Thus he shall act against the strongest fortresses with a foreign God, which he shall acknowledge and advance its glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many and divide the land for gain. So what is this talking about? Again, there are many interpretations of this particular passage. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown interpret this as pointing to the seventh head of the seven-headed and ten-horned beast of Revelation, with Antiochus a type of the Antichrist to come. They add that some identify him with the revived French emperorship, Napoleon, the eighth head of the beast, if you include the three that are bruted, you know, prior to the little horn, who is to usurp the kingly as the Pope has the priestly dignity of Christ. In other words, these verses apply. to the Roman beast system that has dominated our world for the last 2,000 years. Like I said, others may disagree with that. But if you have a look at this, it certainly does fit a great deal into the dominant theme of the past 2,000 years of the history of the Western world, which has impacted the physical nation of Israel and also the spiritual nation of Israel. Then the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god. You know, the Roman empress were considered divine. Shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods. You know, that is blasphemy, thinking that you're divine and that you're over the God of gods. And shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished. Well, you know, the Roman system, the spiritual system, has continued right down until today and has prospered greatly. And so has the, you know, commercial system that has been a part of it too. For what has been determined shall be done. I mean, God has allowed this to go on right up until the second coming of Christ. He shall regard neither the God of his fathers. Well, you know, the Roman church theoretically rejected the pagan gods of ancient Rome, although of course simply through syncretism absorbed some of those beliefs into their version of Christianity. He shall regard neither the God of his fathers. In fact, it does say in the margin here, gods, not just the one God, but gods. So the pagan gods of ancient Rome, of Roman and Greek mythology. Nor the desire of women, celibacy, which is, you know, a teaching of the church for all priests. Nor regard any god, which of course is the case, for he shall magnify himself above them all. You know, the Pope is the supreme spiritual authority in the world, the Vicar of Christ, sitting there as Jesus Christ in Rome. But in their place he shall honor a god of fortresses. It's been a political machine throughout the centuries, and there's been these successive resurrections of the empire which have been militaristic. In their place he shall honor a god of fortresses, and a god which his fathers did not know. He shall honor with gold and silver. You see, the ancient Romans didn't know the Christian God, and of course the false church has distorted this Christian God with precious stones and pleasant things. It's a very wealthy institution, one of the wealthiest and perhaps even the wealthiest institutions on earth. Thus he shall act against the strongest fortresses with a foreign god, which he shall acknowledge but not really worship in the right sense, and advance its glory. And he shall cause them to rule over many and divide the land for gain. And this has been the history of the last 2,000 years. Now, keep in mind, too, something else. As we get to verse 40, you'll understand this. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him. So now we go right into end-time events that precede the second coming of Jesus Christ. Now, why is it that we have such a detailed prophecy of what was to happen to the Jewish people right up until the time of Antiochus Epiphanes, and then suddenly there is this jump to the time of the end, and we just get this very brief description of this last 2,000 years? Well, keep in mind, the Jews did not exist as a nation from the time of the first century right up until 1948. So almost 2,000 years, the Jews did not exist as a nation. So, you know, there couldn't be a detailed prophecy of what was going to happen in that part of the world as it impacted the physical people of Israel or of Judah, because they weren't going to be there. They were dispersed. Now, after the time of Antiochus Epiphanes, you had the Maccabean kings of Judah. But then in the first century BC, the Romans took control at the later part of the first century. And then it became a part of the Roman Empire. So we see this passage here about the Roman system, which carried on. But the Romans wiped out the Jews. The Jews rebelled in 66 AD. By 70 AD, they were crushed by the Romans. And then in 132 AD, they rebelled again. And this time, when the Romans finally crushed them in 135, they drove all the Jews out of the Palestine area. And that's known as the diaspora, the dispersion of the Jews. They just went everywhere throughout the Roman Empire to get away from that particular area. So, you know, they were not there. Now, later on, you know, many did come back, but they did not have control of the area again until 1948, until modern times. So many of these prophecies regarding the Jewish people, they had a certain things happen in the ancient world, but certain things are going to happen in the modern world too. And of course there's a duality as well with Antiochus Epiphanes, for example. What he did in the 2nd century BC, something similar is going to happen again, something worse even, prior to Christ's second coming. And this is because this anti-Jewish, anti-Israel feeling was in the ancient world and is still there today. So now we jump to verses 40 through 45. And we'll read through this, and I'll explain it briefly, but we will be coming back to it again over the next couple of weeks. So the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships. Now, keep in mind now, there is no Ptolemaic dynasty that ended with Cleopatra. There was no Seleucid dynasty. There's no Seleucid empire and no Ptolemaic empire. So who now are the kings of the south and the kings of the north? Well, again, geographically, north and south is in relation to Jerusalem, which is the center of this prophecy. So we're talking about something to the north of Jerusalem and something to the south of Jerusalem. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him, like a whirlwind, with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships. And he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. So this incredible military force will come against the king of the south. The king of the south will push against the king of the north. It could mean an attack. It could just mean some other pressure, maybe economic pressure, maybe connected with oil, for example, because there's a lot of oil in the Middle East, and a lot of those countries that are geographically to the south, have a great deal of oil, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and the Arab Emirates, Iran, for example, Iraq, of course, which is partially south of Israel. They have a lot of oil. It could be something like that. It could be terrorism. Some have said that this even, what happened on September 11th may be a partial fulfillment of this, because, the king of the south pushes at the north, a leader from the south pushes against those countries of the north. And, they come against the king of the south. It doesn't mean it happens immediately. There could be a time gap there. All of these things we can speculate on another time. I'm just giving you a brief synopsis here, okay? But the king of the north comes against him like a whirlwind. Remember Alexander the Great that passed over the ground and his feet did not touch the ground, prophecy said? Well, here now you've got a whirlwind. This is how great this military force is, how fast it is with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships. And he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. So a superior military force. He shall also enter the glorious land, the Holy Land, and many countries shall be overthrown. Now what does that mean exactly? Invaded, taken over, or perhaps the governments will be overthrown, that one after the other will be overthrown. But these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon. The Jordanian people, for example. Jordan has always been a fairly docile nation compared to some in the Middle East, and fairly stable as well. He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt. Also, the Libyans and Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. The news from the east and the north shall trouble him. Therefore, he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many. And he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him. So, the king of the north gets involved in the Middle East. But then there's tidings from the east and from the north. Perhaps, from the east, other Islamic forces, because, the most populous Islamic nations, are the ones that are, further east. Like Pakistan, Bangladesh, for example, Indonesia, which is the world's most populous Islamic nation. And keep in mind, too, the king of the south, it doesn't have to be just Islam. Another sense, in a wider sense, we refer to the third world as the south. A news magazine that comes out of London, which deals with third world issues, is simply called South. because the third world often describes itself as south. So, you know, are all these nations going to come together? You know, we can speculate on those things, and we will, but, you know, now we're just going to finish this chapter, okay? And he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. So a military force will be planted right there. Yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him. You know, that's the end result again. God raises up kings and God removes kings. And the king of the north will come to an end, just as the king of the south comes to an end. And, you know, it all leads up to the second coming of Jesus Christ. Now we get into chapter 12. At that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And to that time your people shall be delivered, every one who is found written in the book. Now this is right at the time of the end here. Okay? Now notice verse 9. It says, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. So this is not to be understood. Daniel 9 and verse 23, remember, the 70 weeks prophecy, it said, consider the matter and understand the vision. So some things are meant to be understood and some things are not. And this particular passage is not meant to be understood by Daniel. The things will not be understood until the end. It says in verse 10, at the end of the verse, none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And, you know, this is talking about the end. So let's go through from verse 1. The 70 weeks prophecy was to be understood then, as most of it was fulfilled in the succeeding centuries that would lead up to the time of Christ, but these end time events were not to be understood by Daniel. They're closed till the time of the end. At that time Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. So this is talking about the tribulation, which is going to come in the future. Christ said the same thing in Matthew 24, that those end time events will be worse than anything that has ever happened before. And at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. So now it's talking about spiritual Israel here. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. The kingdom of God, the resurrection of the saints, rulership in the world tomorrow. But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. That certainly describes very much the world in which we live today. You know, really, the changes that took place from, say, the year 1000 to the year 1750 were not all that significant. Hardly anything changed in that period of time in terms of technology, in terms of scientific advancement. But then you had the Industrial Revolution and things started changing, you know, fairly rapidly. But there's been nothing like what we've gone through in the past 50 years, with incredible advances that have been made in the past 50 years, and things are always changing, and some of us that are a little bit older find it difficult to keep up with all of these things. You know, it's really somewhat intimidating when you can't figure out something on your laptop and somebody age 22 comes forward and solves it in 30 seconds flat, and you were ready to throw the thing in the trash. You know, it's kind of, it's, you know, really is difficult sometimes for some of us. It's humbling, put it that way. But that's the way that it is. It's the same with, you know, I can remember when we first got a TV, we had two channels, and you would, you know, you'd have to get up and walk to the TV to turn it on or off and change the channels. Now I've got, you know, I've got a TV, I've got satellite TV, DirecTV, plus I also have the local channel, so, you know, I've got three remotes, plus the VCR, plus a DVD player, you know. So I've got actually with the DVD player, I've got four remotes. And sometimes if somebody, you know, wants me to do something quickly on it, I can't think. I've got so many remotes and trying to figure out what to do. And it's kind of just a really bad time for pressure. So, you know, all these advances really You wonder sometimes if they have made our lives easier or if they've just created more stress. And I think the impression given here in verse 4 is that they've added to the stress. Many shall run to and fro. I mean, look at the way we drive all over the place. I can't believe it. I can remember when I was a kid. Well, first of all, my parents didn't even have a car until, I don't know, we were 6 or 7 or something. And then to just make a 20-mile drive was a major event and took hours to prepare for it. And now, I mean, you drive 20 miles without even thinking about it. I'm going to drive 330 miles in half an hour without even thinking about it. And I go to Ghana, which is, what, 8,000 miles or something, you know, 3 or 4 times a year, and you know, don't even think about it. And when I was a kid, you know, that 20 miles seemed like, wow, what a distance. How are we ever going to make it, you know? But now many shall run to and fro. Knowledge shall increase. The night Daniel looked, and there stood two others, one on this riverbank and the other on the that riverbank. And one said to the man clothed in linen, so the two others, two angels, one said to the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river, how long shall the fulfillment of these wonders be? Then I heard the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand to heaven and swore by him who lives forever, that it shall be for a time, times, and half a time. That's, 1 year, 2 years, and half a year. Symbolically, 3.5 years. You've got that day for a year principle. Again, 1,260 years. 1,260 days equals 1,260 years, which was the period of Catholic ascendancy, when the true Church of God just could not exist. Did any of you see the documentary on PBS on Wednesday night on the Medici's, on the Renaissance? Fascinating program, and it brings out right at the beginning how the Catholic Church just controlled the minds of all the people of Europe, you know, western part of Europe, right up until the period of the Renaissance. And in fact, it wasn't until the Protestant Reformation that you started to have the beginnings of freedom, and that's all it was, just the beginnings of freedom. It wasn't total freedom immediately. But from the time of the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD in England, and realize England, you know, as we understand Bible prophecy, is, you know, part of the tribe of Joseph, so the birthright, one of the birthright nations of Israel. Joseph was to receive the birthright, and Ephraim was to receive it first. Freedom began with Elizabeth I, and the Spanish Armada, which was the biggest threat to England's freedom, was sunk in 1588. You figure out the years, and it's roughly 1,260 years. Realize a year, you know, biblically is a little bit different to ours, but, you know, you're talking about that long a period of time. You could look at it differently. I'm not sure exactly how the 1260 years is calculated, but from the time of Justinian's resurrecting the Roman Empire in the middle of the 500s until the time of Napoleon, when the Anglo-Saxons, the descendants of Joseph, achieved preeminence, again, is 1260 years. But either way you look at it, I mean, the Catholic Church, you know, just had everybody under control, and there was no freedom. There was no Bible for that length of time. And, you know, the Jewish people as well suffered a great deal in that time, because the church, you know, always persecuted the Jews. The Jews were considered, it was always said by the church that the Jews killed Christ. And, you know, it even went further than that, because, you know, Jews were accused in the Middle Ages of sacrificing babies, Gentile babies, non-Jewish babies at the Passover. In fact, I mean, you know, you can laugh at these things now because we're in a more enlightened period, supposedly. But when I wrote an article about abortion a year or two ago that was in the Good News, I received this big package from somebody who sent it to me, and he sent me proof, in quotes, that all those aborted fetuses were used by Jews as part of their sacrifices on the holy days. And this is what was sent to me. Yeah. And I had something similar. I wrote an article on anti-Semitism and got something just as vicious as a result of that. So, you know, a lot of that hatred is still there. And you might want to keep in mind, too, some people say, well, the Pope has apologized for all of that. No, he didn't. What he did was he made a statement. He said that something along the lines of, Christians have persecuted the Jews. He never said the church has. He never apologized for the church. He apologized for the acts of some Christians towards Jewish people. So the church, you see, is infallible. The Pope is infallible. He cannot do anything wrong. And that is essential to you know, the continuation of the church with the authority that it's got. The Pope is the vicar of Christ. He speaks as God when he speaks. And we need to understand that mentality. And, you know, the people of God, both physical and spiritual, have suffered. And not only the Jewish people, physical people of God, but even, you know, the English people and, you know, by extension, the American people and others as well. If you look at our history, again, I mean, if you look at the history of this country, for example, even during the French and Indian Wars, you know, part of what was happening was this was a Catholic attempt to take over control of North America. And, you know, George Washington fought with the British in the French and Indian Wars, and at that time the British were able to drive the French out of Quebec, which gave us religious freedom. You know, we forget these things because, you know, often we think history began in 1776, but it really did not. The British fought seven wars with Catholic France between 1660 and 1815. Seven wars until finally ascendancy was given to Ephraim, and then, of course, today Manasseh. Anyway, we'll come to that a little bit later on. When the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, all these things shall be finished. So, you know, the church is going to suffer at the end time as well. Although I heard, I did not understand. Then I said, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified, made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly. And none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Again, the story of God's people and their relationship with the rest of the world. And from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away. Now, this is talking about the end now, not what happened in 168 BC. From the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away, and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1,335 days. So what's all this talking about? Well, look at Matthew chapter 24. Matthew 24 and verse 3, Christ is answering the question, what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And in verse 15, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. And so on in that passage. Okay, this is the beginning of tribulation. The final 3.5 years, 1,260 days. But here we see mentioned 1,290 and 1,335 days. And again we see mention of the abomination of desolation. So Antiochus Epiphanes was a type of the Antichrist that is going to come at the end, prior to Christ's return. And again, why would a Gentile army go into Jerusalem and desecrate the temple and end the sacrifices? Again, it's the, you know, this resurgent anti-Semitism, anti-Jewish feeling. But there were no Jews from the first century right down until 1948. But now we've got this rising anti-Semitism again. If you read my article in the latest Good News, I go into that. And the anti-Semitism today is, you know, somewhat inspired by anti-Israel feeling. Because Israel, the country in the Middle East, is almost universally hated. You know, wherever you go, there's this intense hatred of Israel. You know, sometimes without any logic whatsoever, it's just largely emotional. But, you know, that's going to be a central focus of world affairs again. Luke 21, if you just have a quick look there. We've only got 5 minutes, so I need to cover this quite quickly, verses 20 through 22. When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. Then let those in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are in the midst of her depart. Let not those who are in the country enter her. For these are the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. And we know from other prophecies in Zechariah and other Old Testament prophets that Jerusalem is going to be a central focus of the end time events. And it wouldn't have been had it not been for the reestablishment of the Jewish nation in Israel and the intense hatred that other nations have towards those Jews. Now, from this, I think we can deduce at some point the sacrifices are going to be reinstated in the temple in Jerusalem. Maybe this is meant symbolically in some way, but it looks as if the sacrifices will be reinstated. And then something similar to what Jupiter, Antiochus Epiphanes did in raising the statue of Jupiter Olympus in the Holy of Holies will be done again, or perhaps something else in the desecration of the temple, who knows. But the dates here, the 1335 days and the 1290 days. Well, the 1260 is tribulation. This is days before the coming of Christ, okay? The 1260 days, that final period of tribulation. 1290 means 1 month before the 1260. And what happens then? Well, Jerusalem is surrounded by armies, and then it says, let those who are in Judea flee. So what is the 1335 days? Again, we can speculate. Blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1335 days. You know, we can just speculate on this here. Perhaps this is the time when God reveals to us that we should go to the place of safety. Because those who then make the decision to go have made it, so to speak, into the kingdom of God. Blessed is he who waits, has the patience and remains faithful and loyal to God and comes to the 1,335 days, because at that point is kind of the sealing of God's people, if you will, because people, then have to make that decision. And those who go will be protected by God through tribulation, and will be in the kingdom of God as well. But, there are other things you can read into this too, and as with so much of prophecy, we will not know exactly what it all means until it happens. And I take you back to the beginning of the week when I said that when we look at prophecy, what we need to look for more than anything is the trends and not get worked up too much about the specifics. Because when we get into specifics, that's where people get all bent out of shape, and sometimes we have, people go off and start their own church because they feel that, Jeremiah chapter 76 verse 13 means something different to what the church says. There isn't a chapter 76 and verse 13. That's the point. The point is, though, that people can get so focused on a minor specific point that, they become all irrational. So we don't want to do that. One of the great joys, I think, of being in God's church is that we can spend so much time talking to each other and speculating, each one with a different opinion as to what exactly this verse means or that verse means and how it's going to be fulfilled. But it's only after the fact that you know for sure exactly how certain things are going to be fulfilled. So, here we're just speculating a little bit. There's a couple of hands going up. Who wants to go first? Josh? We'll come to that when we go through Revelation.
So, but when that's over, the 1290, isn't it 3.5 days or something like that, and then Christ returns right after?
Yes.
So maybe the extra whatever, how many days?
Well, again, let's cover all of that in Revelation, okay, rather than get into it now, because we only have about 30 seconds left until the bell goes. Mm-hmm. And the gentleman sitting next to you. Okay.
Interesting reading here in the chapter that I hadn't seen before. At that time, your people will be delivered, everyone whose name is found written in the book. That's in verse 1. Verse 3. But those who can discern will shine. Verse 4. Seal up the book until the time of the end. Many will rush here and there as knowledge increases. And then it goes down to verse 10. Many will purify, cleanse, and refine themselves. And the end of it is, but those with discernment will understand. As we're looking at this Gnosticism and everything today, and getting a better and better picture of what's happened, you know, in the last 10 years, you can see more and more possibles as far as all of us understanding. Our level of understanding, I know my own has been 10 times what it was, you know, 20 years ago. So it's something that God is going to give us, it's something that He is going to do for us and to us. That's something that we're going to figure out on our own.
Well, it sounds with Daniel, too. I mean, you think about Daniel had the vision of, you know, all the events in the Middle East revealed to him in Daniel chapter 8, but that vision was incomplete. And Daniel 11, it was much more complete. And I think in the same way, you know, in a few years' time, our understanding of certain prophecies will increase. In fact, our understanding has increased. Over the years, over, you know, the last 30, 40 years. And I expect that to increase even more later on. So Tuesday morning, then, we'll begin the book of Revelation. If you want to start going through Revelation to prepare for that. I don't know how many chapters we'll cover the first day, but if you read the first five, I don't think we'll get beyond that, okay? So anyway, if somebody wants to come forward and take my notes to this class, you can have copies of this made. And you can all get them today.